Today we are on this part of the big book on the Saturday morning meeting where we are working with others. And we covered two pages, and that's on the site a couple weeks ago. And on page 89, it says, everybody get 89? Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity. Immunity. Think of the word they use. Immune means you can't be touched. Immune from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Now, this was their experience. And then you can say, do I want to ensure immunity against drinking? And then maybe you'd want to work with somebody. But it says intensive work. It's different than just being friends. Intensive work with another alcoholic. How can that make me immune from this disease? Well, my disease is self-centeredness. Anybody else have that? And if I turn away from self to helping someone else, then I'm doing God's will for me. And so if I'm doing God's will for me, then I have access to God's power, and then I have immunity from alcohol. I don't think anybody is working with someone and sponsoring them and meeting with them and then go get drunk. I don't know that that happens. It probably has happened, but it's unlikely. And I think this is a true statement. Anything that gets me away from me into others is the key. That's the key for me, getting out of self, serving God and others. It says it works when other activities fail. So if somebody calls you and they tell you, you know, so such and such is going on and this and that, and they go on and on, just say, stop. Who could you turn your thoughts to and help right now? Whose phone number do you have? Who could you call? Who could you visit with? Who could you reach out to? They usually don't want to hear that, but that's what the big book is really all about, turning to others, helping others, serving God and others. It says that's our primary purpose, is to fit myself spiritually to serve God and others. So this is our 12th suggestion. The 12th suggestion is this: carry this message to other alcoholics. So to be able to carry this message to other alcoholics, you have to know what the message is. And so ask yourself, if I prepared myself to carry this message to other alcoholics. Now, how can you find out what the message is? Well, the message is everything up to page 89. See, this big book is a 12-step to me. This big book is the specific directions. This is the message to me. Do I do this or not? The big book's written that way. It starts out with the describing my powerlessness over controlling how much I drink, my choice of drink. It tells me the solution is a relationship with God. It says an absolute certainty that I've entered into a relationship with my Creator in a way which is indeed miraculous. Absolute certainty, that's what they had. Then it tells me about, am I willing to believe in a power greater than myself and look for that power to restore my mind to sanity? Am I making a decision to seek that power and to not play God anymore? And then steps 4 through 9 is how I face and be rid of the things in me that are blocking me from God so that God can work in my life. And step 10 is how I live the spiritual life all day long. What are the principles? What are the actions I need to take? Step 11 is how I review at night how well I did and ask for corrective measures. And 11 is how I meditate each morning and pray each morning so that then when I do the day, I can stay in contact with God. And if you've done that and you're living that, you have a very powerful message to tell someone. And Julie's going to share that tonight, because that's what she embodies that to me, to come from where she came. And I remember when she first came in here to today, and we were talking, and the brightness in her face and her eyes, it just tells me this works. It's one of the reasons I started this meeting, so people could get in the book and do this. So that's the 12th suggestion, carry this message to alcoholics. There's another part of the 12th step that's very important. It may be the most important thing for me to have serenity and peace is to practice the principles in all my affairs. And so we don't talk about that a lot. We talk about 12-stepping is going and talking to someone or bringing them to a meeting. But that's not what the big book is about. The big book is carrying this message to another alcoholic one-on-one. And I thought about it, and I heard something from a speaker that the power of this program, the one-on-one, is that the message is horizontal. It's not vertical. We're not speaking down to someone. And we're better than them. We are the same person, just on the other side of the steps. And we have to make it horizontal. And sometimes a lot of us forget that we're the person we're talking to. And then we think we're a little bit better than them because that dumbass can't stop drinking or blah, blah, blah. But you know, that's the ego coming back because I am them and they are we. And so that's the power, the one-on-one relationship. And that's what helped Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob was a smart guy. He was a rear-end doctor. So think about that. AA started by somebody who operated on people's rectums, and Bill was an asshole. Think about it. He was a shyster. He was a go-getter. He was a manipulator. He was a mess. So we had one asshole relating to another's asshole. But the thing that worked for Dr. Bob was that Bill could think and could tell Bob how he drank in his life, and Dr. Bob could see it. Now, Dr. Bob wasn't a stupid man. He read the Bible every day. He was educated. But he didn't realize that his problem wasn't that he was not doing it right. It's that he couldn't do it. He had no power to keep from drinking. And he thought of himself as a horrible guy because he kept getting drunk. And then we read last night the remorse, the hopelessness, the horror of the next morning. And he kept feeling bad about himself because he couldn't do it. And then once he realized that he just had a disease in which he had no power, then he could start to work the steps. He could kind of forgive himself and look at it differently. That rather than being an immoral, sick, weak-willed person, he could see that he just didn't have power, and then he changed, Dr. Bob changed the world. He was a great man. This carried this message, he embodied that. I mean, I think they said he worked with over 5,000 alcoholics. Now, we got to page 91, and we're going to look at the one-on-one interaction. Now, it's different today than it was then. The word sponsor is not in the big book. Sponsor came from the Oxford group. You had to sponsor someone to speak for them, to bring them to the Oxford group. You sponsored them. You brought them to the group. You spoke for them that this person is someone that could benefit from this. Now, when the alcoholics started working with one another, the sponsor actually, in the beginning, helped pay for the hospitalization because a lot of these people didn't have any money. And then the sponsor would work the steps. They would bring the new person, and they would work the steps, and then they would take them to the meeting. So they had to go up to Dr. Bob's room in his house and do the third step prayer, and then they would sit and they would decide if the person was really serious or not before they would let him come to the meeting. So it was entirely different. So that's where they sponsored the person to come to the group. And before they did that, they had him work the steps. Now, that worked in 1939 when there were only 50 people, and you could work one-on-one. Today it's different, but the book was written with the idea that they would send this message to the world. the first 88 pages, and then the first 102, and then the first 164, the specific direction, so that if you were hopeless like they were, this was their experience that they wrote down, and if you did this, see what your experience was. Now, if you had another way to do it, and you didn't need this, they didn't have a problem with that. They weren't evangelists. They were just sharing what worked for them. So if you have something that's not working for you, try this and tell us the results. And so the book's written that way. It's just suggested that if you're dying and you're hopeless and you have a futile life, you might want to try this. Now, believe it or not, there are a lot of people who are dying who have a hopeless and futile life who look at this and say, this is too drastic for me. You know, I don't need this. I'm not that bad yet. And that's why people die in alcoholism. They can't give up and see the truth about their situation. We talked about that last night. What is hitting bottom? Hitting bottom is to see the absolute truth of your situation that you can't deny anymore. And you're completely hopeless. And you ask for help. And Sandy Beach said something I listened to this week. He said he doesn't want to be hopeful. He wants to be hopeless. Because hopeless is when God can help me. When I'm hopeful, I've postponed it when God can help me. And so I thought about that, and he talked about it, and he thought about it, and I want to stay hopeless on me. And that's, we talked about humility yesterday at the noon meeting. How do I stay humble by understanding I'm hopeless and helpless without God? And so I constantly am seeking to stay humble. We talked about when you think you're humble, then you're not. Then you need to get more humility. And humility is to seek and be the person God created, to seek the power of God. And they're describing here one-on-one, which has a lot of principles and is still applicable today. We have a lot of people come here. We have raging alcoholism and addiction in our society, and we have spiritual steps that will work for any human being. And so how do we grab the new person and take them through this program? The reason I started this meeting was because I thought if I could get a group of people that would read the book and then do what was in it, then they could help other people and read the book and help them do what's in it. And then we would have less people dying, and my son wouldn't have had to die if he could have done this. But he didn't give up on his powerlessness, so he wasn't really defeated yet till he died. But I thought, how can I help people study the book, do the book, teach the book? And so Julie came in here, and she's done the book, and then she's going to help other people. And Lori came in. I remember when she came in, and she's helping a lot of people. And I look around the room at people who are working with others, and so it does work. So here on page 91, it says, see your man alone if possible, one-on-one. And let's see what spiritual principles we could see or principles that we can use. Engage in a general conversation. So you talk, you just talk about how things are going. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. And tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. Now, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. I'm not proud of it, but it's the truth. One of the mistakes I make constantly is I don't do the first step enough with new people. And I realize, having sponsored a lot of people, that the reason people don't make it is they don't take the first step. They think they have, and they talk about it, but they haven't really taken it and admitted, let in their true powerlessness over alcohol and powerless to run their lives, and let into the idea that this is me, and I can't change this. So it says, tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. I don't know why, but I thought about when I came back from treatment, and I had an unfinished area under the stairs, and there must have been 150 bottles there. Now, normal people don't have 150 empty bottles under the stairs. And I remember having to pack them all up and carry them out. And I don't want to forget that. Maybe there were more than 150. It just shows how dysfunctional I was, that I was too lazy to throw away, because I didn't want anybody to see them in the trash.
Right.
Does anybody relate to that?
Yes, I do.
So I wanted to keep it a secret, so they were all under the attic stairs, and I laugh about that, but I don't want to forget that. So I don't ever want to forget the moment I closed the car door and I went in the treatment, and the way I felt, and then I had enough defeat. Like, I felt the presence of God. I said, God, I'm just going to follow you. You're going to take care of me. Just show me what to do. I'll do anything anybody says, and I'm here today. And so I still feel that way. God relieved me of the obsession and directed my life. But the only thing I take credit for is that I kept seeking, and I stayed willing. And I stayed defeated. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. That's another mistake I make. I talk too much. I need to let them talk, but I'm getting better at that. But we need to let them share their experiences. Now, one way you could do it is to read the book with them. You know, have them read Doctor's Opinion and read it in the first person. Instead of saying we or they, say, did I have an allergy of the body? You know, did I drink because of the effect? And the whole first 57 pages is a series of questions. That you read it in the first person and you ask yourself the question, so you could read it with him and have him answer the questions. And so the first two steps is for him to share his experience and see if it applies to him. If you will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. You know, how you hid the booze, how you had to make sure on Friday that you had enough booze. Anybody do that? I never wanted to pay with a credit card because I didn't want people to see how much I charged. Anybody do that? So I had to pay cash. And then I had to figure out how to get the cash without somebody checking on the... It was exhausting. Oh. It's an exhausting life. I don't know... We did it, but it was exhausting. And it says, but say nothing how that was accomplished. So you talk about yourself so he can share, because you're actually trying to do the first step with him. If he's in a serious mood, dwell in the troubles liquor has caused him. And that's important because people forget the troubles real quickly. They come in with a lot of troubles and then they forget them. The ego rebuilds very quickly. It's amazing how we can be defeated on a Monday, and by Wednesday, we think it wasn't that bad. And so, anybody relate to that? Because that's the fatal nature of our disease. Our mind keeps telling us it's not that, we can still fix this. And everybody in this room, and Julie and I talked about it, it's just a miracle we're all alive today. And you look around, there's probably as many people here right now as were sober when they wrote the big book. It said, if mood is like, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. And that's what the book does, right? Describes what an alcoholic is. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick, and that's what they're doing in More About Alcoholism that we're going to read tonight. It tells about the baffling nature of the moment before we drink. That we cannot recall that moment, the consciousness of the defeat of that moment ago. That they want to hammer home our powerlessness without God, so we'll do the deal. So if you really haven't taken the first step completely, you'll eventually convince yourself that you've got a plan that's going to work. And it may not need this. You'll say, I'm not coming back here, he talks too much. I don't need to read the book. You know, this is, you know, all I need is to get that car or get her out of the house or get her back in the house or him in the house or her out of the house all at the same time. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. That can really help. Anybody have plans? They have a date when they were going to quit? and they'd be drinking, but they're going to quit Saturday. Anybody else do that? And you had a whole plan how you were going to do it, and then Saturday came and you say, well,
maybe next Saturday.
Monday. Yeah. Anybody else do that? Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of the spree, and I think that's very important. This mental twist, that's what they call it. That's the moment when you tell yourself it's okay, and you're drinking for whatever reason, your mind says it's okay. But an hour ago, you swore you'd never have another drink. And that's why we die, because our mind cannot tell me the truth about alcohol when I decide in my mind that I want to drink. And that's called this obsession of the mind. And it usually has to do with our spirit. It has to do with the spiritual malady that we don't like the way we feel, and we want to fix that with a drink. Or if we're feeling real good, we want to celebrate because it worked out. And so there's no power that I have that's going to tell me that it's not okay to drink when I want to drink. So how come we're not drinking today? Because we've made a choice, at least I have, to seek the power and have a relationship with the power. And the power gives me the choice today. So I don't want to ever think that I'm not helpless on my own to manage my life or drink. I don't want to think that I have the power of choice today, because that's the ego. I have to understand the only choice I have is to seek God. It says God can and will if he were sought. And so it says, we suggest you do this if we've done in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. And when we read the Jaywalker tomorrow night, see if any of you relate to that. See if any of you relate to Fred. And then that chapter ends with the paragraph Ed likes to read, that we have no effective defense against the next drink. It must come from God. And then, believe it or not, the next chapter is titled We Agnostics, which is all about changing our relationship with God and being open to God's power. It says, if you're satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. So how would you do that? The hopeless feature of the illness. Show him, and they're going to tell you, show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Now, they say it real nicely, but you could tell them you're screwed. You're not going to be able to keep from drinking again. But it's better to have them show you how they tried, or you can tell them your experience. And the why won't willpower work? See, self-knowledge is great, but self-knowledge will only work if willpower will work, if your will will tell you, will have the power to tell you that I don't want to get a drink. It's not a good idea. So we all have willpower. Alcoholics are very strong-willed. In fact, they take their will to the grave. So why won't willpower work? Well, Joe and Charlie said it the best way. Willpower won't work because right before I want to go get a drink, my mind won't tell me there's anything wrong with it. I can only think about what alcohol is going to do for me, not to me. Anybody relate to that? And so we can never think of the consequences. That's why you can't think through the first drink, because your mind will tell you it's okay. And so willpower won't work if I can't see anything wrong with it at that moment. And so that's real powerlessness. So people will think you're talking to them, well, I'll know when that moment comes, when I can't see the truth. Now think about it. I know when it comes, and I'll be able to see the truth at that moment, because I'll know when my moment comes, which is preposterous. And that's why it is a fatal disease. And it says, don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. Now, they mentioned the book several times here. This book was very important to them. There's a lot of work put into this from a lot of people. And Julie said about the big, big book, and I really believe that this is how we become the person in the big, big book, is through this book. And this book has such powerful hand of God throughout it that we know it's a spiritual gift. And so I, one of the thoughts I've heard, and I believe it, is that God wanted to send his message to the world again in a different way. And he used alcoholics because he knew we'd be desperate enough to do this. And he gave us this spiritual program so we could seek him. And it would work for anyone, but a lot of people don't think they need this. But we need it because we have no other choice, right? And we've run out of options. And then it works, and we feel so good about it, we want to share it with everybody, right? It says, be careful not to brand them as an alcoholic. Now, I've heard people say, you're not supposed to tell anybody you're an alcoholic. It doesn't say that. It says, be careful not to brand them as an alcoholic. But when Bill and Bob went to alcoholic number three, they told him he was an alcoholic. So you could tell him. But I think it's careful not to brand them because you want him to see it. Because the line says, let him draw his own conclusion. So me telling you what's wrong with you won't help you if you don't have that conclusion. And then that's not being horizontal. That's vertical if I'm talking down to somebody. So I have to remember, he's as hopeless as I am. The other thing that's try to remember is where you were when you started and be a little understanding of the shenanigans that the sponsees put you through in the beginning, and that they were just like me, and I'm sure I had shenanigans I can't remember. I do remember Cliff telling me that he had to get more minutes on his phone because I was calling him all the time. And so he had to get a new plan for his phone. But you know, I don't know what I would have done without Cliff listening to me. And he really, he was a great guy. He died a month or two before my son died. And Cliff actually developed cancer and ended up taking care of him. And so in the first year or two, it was all about me. And then it became about Cliff. And it was really, that was a tremendous spiritual time. He was a great guy. Cliff Davis remembers him. And Cliff was great. Cliff would never say anything bad about anybody, but he'd mutter under his breath. You don't know what he said. We'd be at Andina's and some guy would be going on, and he'd go, helps a lot of people. So, you know, he had a true humility. And even he used to say how he was a lucky guy. And he went to the last Sunday meeting. He helped start that Sunday morning meeting at 9 o'clock. And I took him there the last time. I didn't know he was going to die that week, but he was close. And we had the oxygen, everything. And he told everybody there he was a lucky guy. I mean, he was a powerful example of steps. And so it says, let him draw his own conclusion. If he can stick to the idea, he can still control his drinking. Tell him he possibly can if he's not too alcoholic. I think another mistake that we make with people is we don't explain them, at least, so that they understand what it means to be an alcoholic. You know, what it really means for me to be an alcoholic and whether he has that. And so I think sometimes we try to get them into the steps so quickly because we know it'll help them. But I think the first step is the key. And we're going to open up in a minute. People can share about all that. If he sticks, but insisted, if he's severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And he has to be convinced of that. Remember, constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself. Has anybody heard that read before? It sounds great. I've been at meetings where we've argued about what constitutionally incapable means. And then, well, you know, we want to know what, you know, we want to understand it. But I think it says on page 25, who cannot do this program, will not or cannot do this program, and it are people who cannot accept the situation. On page 25, it says it very nicely, and there's a solution. It says, you know, they talk about the self-searching, the leveling of pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation. We saw it really worked in others, but here's the key. I had to come to believe, absolutely believe it, admit it, the hopelessness and futility of my life as I'd been living it. And if you can see the hopelessness and futility of your life as you're living it, and you can see the truth, the real truth about it, then that's when you have the desperation of a drowning man to reach for God. And you can give lip service to it, but that moment of complete defeat, when you believe in the hopelessness and futility of your life and you have no answer for it, then it says, when you're approached by the problem has been solved, there's nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools. If you're completely defeated and you've asked for help, you're not going to fight this. You're going to be willing to go to any length. And so we got to page 92, and then we'll pick up with that next week. Okay, guys? Mm-hmm.